Today's Perek in Tanakh is Shmuel Beit Perek Chet. Now, we saw yesterday the Hashlam of Kisei David, the Bayit. These were words that were repeated again and again and again, whether it's in terms of the Bayit of the palace, the Bayit of the Beit HaMikdash, or the Naveh of the Tzon, or the Nayot of the Beit HaMikdash, or the Beit David in terms of the Beit HaMalchut. But again, the key word here is sitting, Kisei, and Bayit. And that basically represents the idea of the Keter David. And for the first time, we have sealed the Malchut. Till now, we've been talking about a Melech that took the place of a Shofet. We're now talking about Malchut Beit David and Geula. And this changes David's entire vision of reality. And we'll see later on when he sings about himself. He speaks of himself in terms of the Mashiach Hashem, the one who is the Elokei Yaakov's representation, talks about himself in very messianic terms, because he's been told here that it's really a matter of him, his child, and his great-great-grandchild ultimately will complete Geula. But what was most important for the continuation was that we saw yesterday, remarkably, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu split the elements of the Malchus into the Milchama of the Malchus and the Shalom, which is going to be Shlomo. And Ish Shalom, as we find later on, he's called, or Mimshah Melech Shah Shalom Shalom. And the Beit HaMikdash is meant to be built upon absolute security. And what HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him is that his tafkid, essentially, was to be the one, and later on he says this over, actually, to Shlomo directly. There's more information in Divrei HaYamim, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him that his business is blood, not Beit HaMikdash is. And that blood is lifanai. He uses the same lashon as a carbon. The Gemara is medayik, that means the chavivut of the milchama of David is equivalent to the chavivut of the karbonis that are brought to Beit HaMikdash, because obviously, in the ultimate sense, the spilling of blood of animals as the predatory mizbeach is only, in a sense, metaphorical for the development of humanity in war. So that the peaceful aspect of the purely biological evolution and the raising of the idea of complexity from the lowest to the highest, ultimately the shimush of Adam versus Behema, which is what the Beit HaMikdash is all about and the predatory Mizbeach is all about, and the Binyamin Ze'ev Yitraf, that is part of the idea of the development of complexity. But the greater idea is expressed in Bereshis, Bishvil Yisrael Shenikra Reshis, in which humanity is viewed as an evolving process of ability to first think and then to be aware and then to be able to act with those levels of understanding, discernment, and discrimination, in which case war is part of the development of the species, exactly as war between species is part of the development of biology. And obviously there's always competition within species. But where it comes to Adam, the difference between the Umais are viewed as species differentiation. That's the whole period of the development of the Shivim Umais with Noah. And what's essential that came out of that was the main two approaches, which was the Nimrodian versus the Avraham. And that becomes part of the whole idea of Avodah Zarah on the one hand, having something that keeps people together, focusing on the Na'aseh Lanu Shem, and being able to do the kind of thing that leaves your mark on the world, in which case all types of silly mechanical things are what's important, including in war. Mechanics of war become important. So the more tanks you have, the more horses you have, the more atom bombs you have, that's the nature of war to the lower level of humanity. The higher level of humanity views war itself as part of the development of intellect and awareness, not simple use of intellects for the mechanics of the Bria, and therefore sees the actual power of the human position as being connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and seeing this as part of Maisa Bereshis as the thing that ultimately wins. Obviously, you need to engage in mechanics for the purpose of dealing with things in the world, and that's the Ishtadlus and so on. But, as HaKadosh Baruch Hu made very clear up front in the Dinim of the Melech, and that's what we're talking about here, the Lo Yar, Lo Susim, I mean, why not the more the merrier? Because that's the point. Al sus lo nirkav. We don't really believe in this stuff. It's the things that you have to do in order to be part of the world. But the randomness of the way things work out and the issues of tactics and strategy and so on means that there's so much more that's involved than the simple mechanics in war, that we rely on the ultimate victory, not in the power of numbers, as we saw before when HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's too many people. I don't want people to think that we need so many people. Send them all home. Send the thousands home. I'll take the few hundred that are left. Or Yonatan and his nar can go up there and defeat the Plishtim. As he said, well, what's the difference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? That doesn't mean he didn't have to go up there with his sling, with his arrows. But it was not Bekeach, the arrow, that he really viewed. In other words, he needed to make an impact on the plot. Once that impact was made, it became a mental issue. And as we know, today, more and more, war is fought in the newspapers, not in the battlefield, so that you win or you lose based on your ability to present the moral position. And that can completely... It mess up any power that you would have, physical power. It's no longer usable, that physical power. And on the contrary, you can defeat your enemy through the use of perception and mind. And this, of course, is why ultimately the milchama is with Amalek, where that's the profession, is to deal with the armumiyot and the representations and the lashon hara. That was the relationship that we saw of Doeg to Amalek before, in the strange medrash and the psikta that viewed the Amaleki as being Doeg HaAdomi. So all of this now becomes central in David's mind. And therefore, what we're going to do now is have a perek that telescopes everything that he does in the course of his malchus for the next 30 years into a few lines. Because in his mind, he's telescoped. What he's interested in now is being the one who achieves what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said yesterday needed to be achieved, namely the complete hachna of all of the enemies of Yisrael, which would mean the complete conquering of Eretz Yisrael that was left unfinished from the time of Yehoshua, and now presenting his son, the Ish Shalom, at the end of his life, with the ability to build a Beit HaMikdash, which would be built, first of all, with Yisrael in complete control of the Middle East, furthermore, with Yisrael having taken all of the goods, metals, and necessary economic issues from the Umayyads around them, and invest them and prepare for the actual building of the Beis HaMikdash. So that means whatever he was doing here was viewed as the Hashlama of Yerushas Haaretz, which is Menucha v'Nachala, the coming to Yerushalayim, and the using of that money to prepare for the Beit Hashem. And of course, we know that it was more than money. In the end, he actually purchases the Mokum of the Mikdash, digs the foundations for the Beis HaMikdash. All of that is yet to come. But the focus from yesterday drove him directly to Milchama. And here is a brief description of his Milchamot. The details of some of these Milchamot come out much, much later. And we will learn about them even in Divrei Hayomim, things which are just berumas. Here we don't know very much what it's supposed to mean. But we do find out that the entire Eretz Yisrael, all the way from Nachal Mitzrayim till Nahar Prat, was taken over by David HaMelech. And the reason that we don't want to give him the credit for that is because of the problem of Yerushalayim. That Kodesh Baruch Hu tainas on him, that you did not do what you needed to do in your own backyard, and that needed to come first. So Vayi Acharechein, after this story, which shows us that his focus needs to be on war, Vayach David et Plishtim Vayachni'im, we have a total turnabout. We're not even told how this happened. I mean, in one sentence, we're told that instead of defensive measures against Plishtim, who were driving up to the train station of Yerushalayim, up Emek Rephaim and Derech Beit Lechem, the roads that we walk on and drive on every single day, which means right outside, you've got to be protecting yourself from Plishtim, from his Mitzudah. He goes on the offensive, attacks the Plishtim in their territory, and he's able to completely crush them. Vayikach David et mete ga'ama miyat Plishtim. He takes now. Now the mete ga'ama has become a metaphor And the question, what it originally meant is not clear, but metag ha'aman now means, the metag, the literal meaning is the metag was is a piece of metal that you stick in, into the ama, which is the bit that holds the animal in place. So that would be the metag ha'aman. In divrei hayamim, this is a reference to gut. Because as we saw before, that was the central area, all of the plishtim when they came up, it was to Achish, and so apparently that was the metag ha'aman that kept the plishti animal, the federation of the plishtim, together.
The linchpin.
The linchpin. Perfect. Thank you. Perfect. Beautiful. Perfect. I was needed that word. Okay, so it's the word for the linchpin, exactly. So he took the linchpin of the plishtim, and the word, the pasuk that matches this pasuk in Divrei Hayomim is Vayikach David et Gat miyad plishtim, which makes it very reasonable to say that that's what it's a reference to. So that was, as Chazal put it, the metropolitan Shel Malachim, that was their metropolis, and that was the place where all the Sarnei plishtim had come together, and we call him a melech. The other Saranim, Achish is called the Melech of Gat. The other cities were all called governors. So clearly, Sanei Plishtim, so clearly that was the centerpiece. Now there's also a remez in the Medrash that the Meteg Ha'amah was the actual pin that came from the Chamor of Yitzchak Avinu. And he had given this to Avimelech as an indication that he had guaranteed the Plishtim against attack by his descendants for Li, Nini, or Nechdi. And this had been like the major thing that they always displayed, similar to the Ivrim and the Pisrim of the Yavus, who also had that kind of guarantee. They used this as the sign. Now, the fact is that what's going to be going on in this parak is remarkable. David basically violates every treaty that had been made by the Avot. He attacks Moab, which you're not allowed to do in the Torah. He attacks Edom, which you're not allowed to do in the Torah. He attacks Aram, which you're not allowed to do because of Gal-Ed and the promise to Lavan. He attacks the Plishti, which you're not allowed to do because of Avimelech. And that's the common denominator of what is about to be discussed. This is a remarkable situation. The Medrash actually describes David HaMelech as taking off his Bigdei Malchus. Very strange Medrash. Putting on a talit and walking into Beit Din, Sanhedrin Agdol, and telling the Sanhedrin, I don't want any hashpah on the psak by the fact that I'm a melech, I'm here as a commoner, and I'm bringing suit against the treaties that were accepted by the Aves. It's all very nice, but nobody seems to be paying attention to the fact that those treaties have been violated. And therefore, since they've been violated, they were the ones that abrogated the treaties. You can't have it all on your side and not on the other side. Exactly. Unbelievable. Exactly. Up to now. It's unbelievable. So he says, this has got to stop. Every time we come up there, they wave the Metag ha'aman, or they wave Gal-Ed, or they wave the Ivrim and the Pisrim, and we're never allowed to do anything. How long? It's unbelievable. How long is this going to go on? He says in the most contemporary fashion.
The other side of the treaty was that they would not attack.
Of course. It says Beferish both ways. I mean, by Gal-Ed, it says Mamish openly, right? So who is to say, says David, that a treaty remains in force just because they withdraw? And he shows how every one of these umays have violated the treaty. The plishtim keep fighting us. Aram has been attacking with Gedudim. They don't have a right to attack with Gedudim. The Miflagot L'Reuven were constantly coming into contact in Tzova and so on. We're fighting these guys. Why do we have to keep fighting these guys? The plishtim are coming up, Emek Rephaim. I got to wait for them to come to Emek Rephaim. Let's take them out once and for all. Now, obviously, this represents not only a change in attitude, but it's also, it must mean, again, which we don't see here, but which we do see in Divrei Hayomim, by the repositioning of all of these prakim, in Divrei Hayomim, the list of the Giborim Asher LeDavid occurs in the context of this parak and the mice of Peretz Be'uza. Everything is inverted there. So that this, the Perek of the promise to, of Peretz Be'uza comes in between the wars of the Plishtim. So that apparently he's learning. This is a heuristic process. So there's that first war, which apparently was not all that successful, because the next day they're already back coming up into Emek Rephaim. And Peretz Be'uza comes in the middle where he learns a different attitude, where then he's given the thing about waiting. Don't necessarily feel you have to fight using your power of wait, and then you'll hear the trees. That's more important than your weapons, which was that unbelievable story. The Gibore David that is brought here only at the very end of the book, as if just to give, oh, by the way, this was a list of all the people that had been active, appear there in Divrei HaYamim, because obviously this is what's been going on. He is creating a different vision of an army, a different vision of responsibility, a different level of human that's able to handle these things instead of just L'lamed b'nei Yehuda keshet. And everything is changing. So there we get the fuller picture. Here we just want to go and discuss the issues of the Malchus. So there's Peretz, and we contrast the Pratzim to each other. So we have the Peretz in the Beit Peretzim and the Peretz Be'uza, and there needs to be now an understanding of what it really means. Then there's the desire for the Orein, in the way in which Divrei HaYamim, it speaks out openly. In the days of Shaul, they didn't give it a hang about the Orein. They left it there, and nobody was ever derish the Orein. We're going to go and be derish the Orein. And then after Peretz Be'uza, he says, Lo derashnu kemishpat. We were derish. We weren't derish properly. So we should have been derish also the fact that it has to be Ayyadei Leviim and so on, which was a big question. What is the Mishkan still part of the Mikdash? Do we continue to focus on the Aron as a Mikdash idea, as a moving idea? This is something we've discussed at great length in the Parshas, that the Aron is by definition movable. That's why it has to include the Badim as part of the Kli, whereas none of the other Kalim are by definition movable. You can make them movable by putting in the Aron, by putting in Badim, but you can't take out the Badim ever from the Aron. That's one of the Taryag Mitzvahs. That is such a blatant slap across the face about thinking that the Aron could ever be kavua in a bayit and it isn't in its essence a mishkan, that he says lo derashnu kemishpat. And then we have this transition into real malchus and into war, which this is. So again, this is not a historical description, because we're not interested in chronology. It's the description of the development of the mentality, the morality, and the level of humanity of the Malchus.
Is the Aron being movable the equivalent of sitting on our suitcases?
You mean in Yetzias Mitzrayim? I think it's the equivalent of mentally sitting on your suitcase. It's not that you're worried and insecure, but that you're worried about your beliefs. Because the Aron represents your belief system. It's all of the elements of Torah. So it means it's not settled the way you think. It's still a work in progress. It's the essence of an Aron. So now he starts off with being machnia. That means completely crushing them, the Plishtim. And then vayachet Moav viciously. Now the reason for this, as the Gemara and the Medrash points out, he had an arrangement and an understanding with Moab because of the fact that he was from Moab. He trusted Achish, he trusted the Melech Moab in a deeper way. What was his deep trust? Okay, Achish, we know that he needed to. That was the whole Tziklag period. But what was his deep trust in the Melech Moab? He put his family there. His mother, his father, his siblings. He trusted them with the lives of his family. The Melech Moab murdered his family. Yeah.
A while ago.
Right. But now that to him was, that's like the ultimate breakdown. One escaped. We'll get to all of them. So he goes and attacks Moab viciously. Vaymadedem b'chevel, hashkevotam arza, vaymaded shnei chevalim lahamit, umlo hachevel achayot. He had them lie on the ground. And, I mean, either it means literally or it means, you know, Chevel is always a lashon of Nachala, right? Chavalim Nafluli Bani Imim, and killed out 2/3 of the population. So it's like the SS, you know, two go to the left and one goes to the right. And basically,
they do it by size. I thought maybe it was a genetic thing to make.
Okay,
it
does. It doesn't say.
No.
Sorry?
3,000 notes. That's what I'm saying. There's shot of 1,000 notes that say chai in 2000.
Yeah, yes. And that's, again, it doesn't mean literally by laying down chavalim. Chavalim is also talking about goralot. Chavalim is talking about stamp portions. So again, there's many different explanations of what it means, vayimadadim chevel. But that's the way it's said. In other words, he portioned them out, l'chaim or l'mavet. So it could be through goralot. It could be that he had information about who was on what side, or who was dangerous, or, and so on and so forth.
Why not just wipe Moab and be safe?
Because we do have a certain responsibility for Moab. Moab is among the children that were Yorish, the land of the Rephaim, along with us through Avram Avinu. So therefore, it could be that that's even a remes to the Chevel, because they share the Chevel Nachala. So Ashkevo Tamarza got them all down on the ground, whether this means literally or metaphorically, and then chose who lives and who dies. And from that day on, Vatehi Moav leDavid laAvadim Nosei Mincha. They were vassals to David, who needed to pay an immense amount of tribute. We have records later of 100,000 tzon, and I mean, these are major, major tributes that are coming in, and he's putting all this money aside in a Beit HaMikdash building fund, as we'll see later. Vayach David et Hadad Ezer ben Rechov Melech Tzova Belechto Lashiv Yado Binahar Perat, which we won't give him the credit for, and therefore it's a kri, but not a ktiv. Lamaisa Hadad Ezer went and tried to take areas that were meant to belong to Yisrael. So this was like, that David wasn't going to put up. He wanted to go and to expand and make that officially now part of Aram. David went out now to stretch Eretz Yisrael all the way to Nahar Prat as it was meant to be. Of course, Nahar Prat it depends what area of Nahar Prat. Hadad Ezer being further south is Nahar Prat further east. But there's the Aleppo area. But there's also, above Syria, David went all the way up to Turkey, because he gets to Hamat, which is the Malchus at that time, is also the city of Hamat, which this, of course, made a tremendous impact on him, as we'll see. Vayilkod David mimenu elef ushva meyot parashim ve'esrim elef ish ragli. And so he captured there from Tzova. He captured now 1,700 parashim, which might refer to the entire, not just the actual cavalry, but to all of the equipment and everything that went along with that. And 20,000 foot soldiers. Vayaker David et kol harechev vayoter imenu meyarechev. He got rid of all of the sus, all of the tanks. This is crazy. For no reason. Except for the fact that Yoshua was told lechatchila when he started fighting, you are to etasus teaker. So that for all of the fear of the tanks, Yisrael never built tanks. They just burnt them, destroyed them. And that was because HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Yoshua in the first place, I don't want this to be now a fight between tanks and horses. So that a melech can't have horses, David said, let's get rid of the horses. Be okay, the sus. Lame them. Either cut through the tendon or literally cut off the parasot. But to make them unusable for war, so that in order not to be nichshal, what Shlomo, his son, was nichshal in the end, in the ribuy of susim, he didn't even want to have sufficient to make an army of susim and left over only 100 rechev. Some say that he didn't even take that for himself. Maybe it means he left over to leave for Hadad Ezer, for the enemy. That's how much I'll leave you. Or it meant that this was kedei merkavto, which the Gemara and halacha is that he's allowed to have kedei merkavto. Okay, so mea he could have. Mea rechev may mean including the entire teams. You know, it could be each rechev required 4, as I said, the Rishonim, or backups, or 8, whatever it is. That much he left. This is the conquering really of Eretz Yisrael, except that since it was done wrongly by not taking over the areas that were already from the time of Yoshua, it wasn't given the din of the real kibush of the Melchama of kibush of Eretz Yisrael, which was a terrible failure. In other words, this is like a jumping ahead. We saw the lashon of Ishmael here, so that even in the Milchama, there were elements of jumping ahead. If you take a look in Tehillim, you see that these wars were not straightforward the way they are here. Because we find Tehillim in which he talks about coming to Aram Tzova, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not Yotzei B'Milchamteinu, and why is this, and what happened, and why did we fail? I mean, so you see there are tefillas that remain from this period in which these wars, each one of these wars was a learning process, in which he needed to understand what he had done wrong. And every time it was a element of tshuva and learning, and only then we find Vayosha Hashem, as we're going to see, the same Vayosha as the last minute, the last resort, just like we find by Mitzrayim. Vayosha Hashem es Yisrael, Miad Mitzrayim. Here too, we find that as a theme again and again with David. So these were not simple things. Then Aram Damesek came to help Hadadezer Melech Tzova. Apparently they had a brit. And then David attacked Aram Damesek. So this is now Syria, Damascus, Aleppo. Esrimu Shnayim Elafish. So there were 22,000 people from there that he got. Vayasem David. And from that day on, David put governors that were now responsible for collecting the mass, the tribute, and keeping public order, so that the entire Syria was under the thumbs now of David. Nitzivim Baram Damesek, Vati Aramu David, La'avadim Nosei Mincha. They became now tribute bearers. Vayosha Adonai David B'chol Asher Alach. So clearly there was need for Yeshua. Again, it's only a remez here, but we find the bitter, bitter, bitter days in these wars. They weren't walkover wars. Vayikach David et Shul. Because we're talking here, we're not interested in the details of the war. We're interested in the results for the malchus, the preparation for the Beis Hamikdash, as I said before we began. Vayikach David et shiltei hazahava shirayu el avdei hadadazer vayivim Yerushalayim. This is the kol shiltei agiborim that's referred to in Mikimigdal David Savaretz. Apparently these were, most learned that shiltei refers to magine. It's a kind of a very, for the highest people, they had these decorative shields that were made out of gold, and those became symbolic of the power of David that were put on Migdal David and would shine out. So this was like a simon of all of the different countries that had been conquered. Umibetach, umiberotai, orei hadadezer, lakach hamelech David nechoshet harbei meod. That became the nechoshet that was used for the Yam Shel Shlomo, as we'll see later on. So all of this was preparatory. These were wars that were preparatory for the Shalom of Shlomo, for the Beit HaMikdash, and for the actual building of the Beit HaMikdash, monetarily. Vayishma Toi Melech Hamat, ki ka David et kol chel Hadadazer. So Toi, who is now the king of Hamat, Hamat is both a city, but it's also a mamlacha. So it's the mamlacha that comes all the way up in the north to modern-day Turkey and touches Nahar Prat on that northern end. So there, too, that was meant to be part of Eretz Yisrael. Toi hears about this. Vayishlach Tori et Yoram b'no el HaMelech David lish'ola l'shalom l'vorecho al asher nilcham bar Hadadezer v'yakeu ki ish milchamot Toi haya Hadadezer. This Hadadezer was an ish milchamot of Toi. He was his enemy. Why wait? Might as well start paying now. So he sends his son together with tribute to David. So here we see clearly the gam is, means that every single war that David had engaged in and all the tribute that he was bringing in was being set aside for the covered of the Beit Hashem. Me Aram, umi Moav, umi bnei Amon, umi Plishtim, umi Amalek, umi Shlal Hadadezer ben Rechov Melech Tzova. And you'll notice that again, these are all the people you're not supposed to be fighting, right? Except for the Amaleki. Vayaz David Shem, and Hashem had promised him, I'm going to make you a shame to Shem Agdolim Asher Baretz. And so David became now famous across the globe. B'shuvo me'akoto at Aram b'gei melach, 18,000. And so apparently this was now in the area. He was coming back to an area where they had salt evaporating areas. And he had now killed 18,000 of B'nai Aram. And not only that, v'yosam be'edom nitzivim b'chol adom. some netzivim, v'yichol Edom avadin lo David, v'yosha again, v'yosha Adonai et David, v'chol asher alach. And there too, although Edom is the most difficult of territories, in terms of the Shena Sela and so on, but he was able also to conquer Edom. We're going to see later on that he had sent Yoav there, and they had, this was also a taina against David later, in that he killed the males of Edom that he really wasn't allowed to do, because that was the equivalent of being Yorish them if they're not going to have descendants who terribly weakened Edom, which was more than he had a right to do. But again, we'll see the details of this later. But in the context of these wars, we're not focusing on the good and the bad, but on the results, on the end, in which Hashem was Moshiach him, because whatever had been done wrong, he was mitaken. Vayimloch David al kol Yisrael, vayi David oseh mishpat utzdakah l'chol amo. So this was now the key of Avram Avinu's lasot tzedakah u'mishpat, except in the inverse, as Chazal point out, that where Avram Avinu had to stress tzedakah before mishpat, because that's what he was coming to be koveya in the world, was the hanhaga of chesed, but ultimately it needed always to be done by mishpat, Dovid HaMelech would first stress mishpat, and remember that that was the bakashas HaMalchus originally, the shofteinu. There needs to be somebody who asserts justice. So if you're asserting justice, how can you do tzedakah? Say Chazal, very simple. He asserted justice, and then if he felt that the guy couldn't afford to pay, he would pay it himself. First, this is the din. This poor man owes $1 million to this fat slob. What can I do? That's the halacha. Now he can't afford it. We have a fund for people who can't afford it. But justice is justice. Don't confuse giving things to the poor with what is right. V'Yoav ben Tzruya la'tzava, and Chazal point out this tremendous connection between these two words. It's because David was oseh mishpat utzdakah l'chalamo that Yoav ben Tzruya was successful on the tzava. And it's because Yoav ben Tzruya was willing to take the tzava and do what needed to be done that David was able to be oseh mishpat utzdakah l'chalamo instead of being osek always in milchamot. And it also, of course, provided the police force for David. People accepted the mishpat u'tzedakah because of the fact that there was nobody who could stand up against David and Yoav al hatzava. V'Yehoshafat ben Achilud mazkir, so that this was the, we call today, the Secretary of State. We use the same word, mazkir, the Secretary of State. V'Tzadok ben Achituv v'Achimelech ben Eviatar Kohanim u'Saraya Sofer. So now we have the two houses of Aaron, in Tzadok ben Achituv and Achimelech ben Eviatar. So we have the Itamar together. And it was from Beit Eli. We're still going with Itamar. But we also have Elazar. So he made sure that both of them were represented in the Kuna. Siraya was the personal sofer of the Melech and over the affairs, the local affairs of state. Uvenoyahu ven Yehoyada v'akresi v'aplesi. Crazy v'aplesi, according to Chazal, is a remez to the real mashmaut is that Allah Kreis v'Alaplesi is that Benayov and Yehoyada was over Sanhedrin. Kreis v'Alaplesi is the leadership of the Urim V'Tumim as opposed to the reading of the Urim V'Tumim. But the pashtus is that it's referring to various marine elements like the people that are ready to, I don't mean marines, I mean the shock troopers. So the ones who are most bekiyim in utilizing the slingshot and the sharpshooters, in other words, and the arrows.
Who's the shot?
So nobody knows exactly. It could be people from Crete, maybe. But again, I mean, the Targum refers to the sharpshooters. So that's again, obviously, why is the Urim V'Tumim? Why the Urim V'Tumim called sharpshooter? Because they're Koreit Divrayim. And they're mafliya divrayim, they're always exactly, very meduyak. You never get more information than is absolutely necessary. So we refer to the Urim V'Tumim as a metaphor here, creative aplati. So it exists on both levels. Ubnei David, kohanim hayu. The children of David were noblemen. All of them were looked as the highest of nobles. Loshon of kohanim is in the Targum, Rav Ravin. Choshev and respected across the Am. I'll point out a number of interesting things that we find here about David. One is the Mishpat u'Tzedakah that is said over here by David, appears by Shlomo as well, that he was Oseh Mishpat. utzadaka. And by Shlomo we find v'yisimcha lamelech lasot mishpat utzadaka. So from here Chazal learned that the vaunted chokhmah of Shlomo was really only shokul to David, and David was shokul to Shlomo, because the way in which that chokhmah is expressed in the world is similar both in David and in Shlomo. We also learn over here that the nature of Tamid HaChomim is to be Neitel Barosh, because when it says Bnei David Kohanim, which clearly can't mean literally that they were Kohanim, it must mean that they are the Madrega of Tamid HaChomim. Why call them specifically Kohanim in this context? To teach me, says the Gemara, just like a Kohen is Neitel Barosh, because of the covenant of the Kohen has to take the Chelek HaKohuna before the Bailim or Eichlin, so too a Talmud Chacham is Neitel Barosh. That is the question of markets and how it is to treat a Talmud Chacham who's waiting in line. We find that also in the previous parak, where David HaMelech is told that it's only after he dies that there will be a Beit HaMikdash, and it stretches, it's over there. Ki yimal'u yamecha. That's because everybody who hated David, and the Medrash also said, well, who hates David? Well, obviously, only 50% of people are going to come out of the din of David being happy, because the other 50% are going to be ruled against, right? But the greatest Oyve David were the ones who wanted to go out and to make money that was illegal, and to be Osheik. Those people hated David. So they were always saying, well, Halavai Yamut V'Yolat Shemo, so that we can have a Beis HaMikdash, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu to David. One day of your tzedakah v'dinim that you make is more choviv to me than having a Beit HaMikdash. Shema Vayi David Oseh Mishpat Utztaka. Whereas the Gemara puts it, one day of your learning is worth more than 1,000 korbanos that Shlomo is going to bring. So David HaMelech's Darga over here is his Asik in justice, his Asik in tzedakah, his Asik in Torah, and his Asik in building a concept of Melucha that can take us through to Yemot HaMashiach, not a Malchus that's built on the power of horses. And it's interesting that the horse becomes so. This we see in the Navi, Al Sus Lo Nirkav, V'lo Nomar Od Eloheinu L'Maaseh Yadeinu, becomes the essence of Hilchos Teshuva. That the fact that a person is willing to ride, and we say today, boy, he's on his high horse. So he's on his high horse, is the lashon of gaiva. And we find that lo nomar od Eloheinu l'maaseh yadeinu, we won't take our accomplishments and turn them into gods. That's the high horse, not just the literal avodah zarah, which of course Sus also stands in for very often, or the literal shvichas damim, which also the horse stands in for. Both as a metaphor, milamala to dinim, rechavesh, susei esh, which is the keyach midas hadin, that's ritzicha, essentially. So the sus lamil chama, or the sus that loves war, gets all excited in war, and loves trampling and killing and so on. And then we have the sus that is shatuf bezima. So we always view susim, zirma sus, zirma sam, the mashal. So that's the idea of all those issues, the kina, the taiva, the kavod, or the gilui arayah, shvichas domim, and avodah zarah, are all merumas, surprisingly, in sus. Exactly. Perfect, exactly. So that the stress that we are not people that follow the sus is so much contemporary. It's like an entirely different vision of war, that war is measured in war machines. Which, you know, it's how many horsepower, how many planes you've got. That's right, it's still horsepower. The tanks have more horsepower.
With those charts showing how many tanks and planes they had going into the war and the change. Yeah.
So, Bezrat Hashem, we should be zocha to a restoration of the original vision with Richie standing up there. Mila Hashem Elai.
Yeah, they didn't have a gold stone then, you know.
That's why.
Fantastic conscience. Kaiser Wilhelm will only enter Yerushalayim if he comes in on his chariot. So the Turks break down the wall of the old city, he should be able to come in. Allenby refuses to come in on the horse, where Jesus says what? He gets off of his
as a conqueror.
He gets off of his horse and walks through Jaffa Gate, the small one. What a contrast. 20-year difference, right?
That is amazing. Look, yeah, that's the difference. That's the difference between Germans and the side of real civilization. It really is a difference. Britain was a completely different kind of empire.